think of like athletes, they create routines that maximize speed and agility and strength. And as business people, especially, I'm an entrepreneur and a working parent and a leader, all three of those things. I need a routine every day that's going to unlock my highest quality thinking. And here's where we mess up.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. Well, I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. You know, we're always looking for ways to help you become great, to help you raise, elevate your game, to help you become the person that you should become. And a lot of the time, it sounds like spiritualism and gobbledygook, but every now and then somebody comes along and writes a book that's actually based on fact and experience, proving to you that you too can do it. And that person today is Christina Curtis. Christina, it is great to have you on the show. Your book, Choosing Greatness, an evidence-based approach to achieving exceptional outcomes. And so success is no accident, in other words, right?
Success is no accident. There's a lot of science around how to actually achieve the level of success you want, personally, professionally, from a wealth and well-being standpoint. And that's what we talk about in the book.
All right. So what are the three most important factors in judging whether somebody will eventually become a success or not?
That's an interesting question. You know, the first thing is whether they can get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think it's really important, Carrie, because success, I mean, what does success mean? It's different for each person, but regardless, it is something that they have not yet attained. It is out in the future somewhere where they have to create a tension between where they are now and where they want to go and get there. And guess what? It means choosing new patterns of behavior, new thoughts, new actions, new approaches. And when you try something new, the brain's response is often to say, hey, hold the phone. I don't want to do anything new. I've been doing this for as long as I can remember. It's working just fine. Thank you very much. The brain is an economical organ. It does not want to burn mental calories. It doesn't need to. So anytime you try change, you get discomfort. I mean, I think of it this way. If you're on a treadmill and you hit moment three, for me, maybe for other people, it's later, but you hit moment three and you're like, I don't really want to be doing this anymore. Your brain will rationalize why you can slow down, get off, or do other things because it doesn't want to grow. It doesn't want to push through to that next layer. So getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is critically important. And the people I work with who are at the titans of their industry, the top of their game, they are every year building up a higher and higher tolerance to manage discomfort, which means they can scale, which means they can grow, which means they can take on things they're not capable of achieving yet, but they're going to lean in and figure out how and build the teams that will get them there. I think that's really important. That's the first one. Does that resonate with you, Carrie?
Absolutely. And I once read that successful leaders are able to manage ambiguity, meaning that there's two conflicting thoughts or events taking place. The average person will just throw up their hands and they'll just choose one, but that a leader can keep those two conflicting thoughts in their mind and move ahead in spite of it and actually attain results. And maybe both these thoughts that appear to be conflicting really aren't. They might fit together, but I don't know what your thoughts are about that. It's a little out there, but what do you
think? No, it's not out there. It's right down the middle. It's right on the fairway. If you think about the second one, which is objectivity and a balanced approach, it means don't just react. Don't just react. We actually operate on autopilot 42% of the day, Carrie. So we wake up and we do what we've done before, again, to conserve mental energy and stay safe. We've already done it. We're safe now. So I guess if I repeat it, it's all good. The challenge is we become very binary in our thinking. Should I do this or that? Should I choose this or that? Should I engage this way or that way? And the reality is between one answer and another, there's a whole rainbow of options that could also be true. And cognitively, we tend, like if I say to you, did you like the movie Forrest Gump? You may say yes or no, very binary. It's quick. You don't even have to think about the answer. But if I said, what was your favorite part of the movie and why? You got to slow down and think. It's not a yes or no answer. And so you have to be balanced and objective to slow down and say, based on this vantage point, based on this person asking, what do I want to share? That's breaking a pattern. That's breaking a pattern and causing you to open a new part of your brain that's focused on critical thinking. And the executives who I work with who are exceptionally strong leaders and who are have very padded wallets, who have made a lot of money, are not just reacting, they're responding. So they're really pausing, they're elbowing their way in that space between an event and their reaction to it to say, what's my long-term goal here? And how do I need to show up to generate that versus just, here's how I'm going to react. Here's the emotion that shows up in my body. So I'm going to roll with that. I think responding very methodically by being balanced, no high spikes, no lows, to say, here's what I need to do in order to move us forward is really important. So I would completely agree. Ambiguity, you often move to, how do I create certainty fast? And if you slow down, you'll realize uncertainty is not so bad if we could just find our best next step and start exploring other options and learn.
So cognitive dissonance, that will set in oftentimes, especially when you're trying to do something new. The average person just shuts down and goes to a auto response, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
They're just a default response without looking ahead critically. So leaders got to learn to manage cognitive dissonance in a positive way.
Well, and be aware of what your patterns are. One of the greatest things that we do when it comes to executive coaching is pausing to say, what patterns in your day are helping you and which ones are eroding your results and your relationships without even thinking about it. I'll use a really easy example, which is food, right? If I'm walking my airport, I travel a ton for work, and I see a bag of salt and vinegar chips. It doesn't matter if it's 9 a.m. or midnight. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to stop and buy that bag of chips. And if my goal is to get fit this year, that choice is not in alignment with what I want to create, but I have such a pull. It's automatic. I don't even think about it. Frankly, sometimes I don't even enjoy the brand of chip. I just get it. So that's an example of an automatic pattern. If I pass the chip stand, I immediately feel discomfort. Oh, would have been good. Would have been great to have it. So you feel this pull back to your regular behavioral patterns. And that's where cognitive dissonance comes in. I can rationalize my way out of giving up on anything. I can rationalize my way on going back to the way I've always done it in a heartbeat. But if you just recognize that's just a neurological pattern, a risk barometer saying, let's just stick to what's safe. Let's stick to what's comfortable. You can say, I don't want to choose that this time. Hold the discomfort and choose change anyway.
So the people you talk to, do they do meditation, relaxation, dance?
Yeah.
What are their main ways of A, coping with stress, and B, keeping their thought waves open, if you will?
Yeah, well, in addition to getting comfortable being uncomfortable and really responding versus reacting, the third point around success is setting a regimen up that brings out your best. Think of like athletes. They create routines that maximize speed and agility and strength. And as business people, especially, I'm an entrepreneur and a working parent and a leader, all three of those things. I need a routine every day that's going to unlock my highest quality thinking. And here's where we mess up. We tend to think the more I pack into my calendar, the more productive and efficient I'm going to be. And the problem is, what I've really learned, again, from people who are bringing in the billions, not just the millions, is you need space for your body and your brain to have a micro break so it can recharge. Because we actually only have about 240 minutes of high octane thinking in a day that's available to us. So if you just run from one meeting to one meeting to one meeting, come home and do one chore to the next chore to the next chore, you are moving yourself back into these habitual patterns that come barreling down your well-honed neural pathways rather than creating space. And what does that look like? It may be meditation. I've got a timer on my desk and I do 2-minute breaks 3 times a day with just sitting still and breathing. And it allows me to move from any risk of distress back into healthy stress. I work with a lot of executives who will move their body rather than sit still. And so they may walk one block and just listen to music, not be on a call, not multitask, but just walk one block. The goal is to get away from hyper-focused intensity a couple times a day and creating a regimen that will bring that forward so you can recharge, renew, and be running as fast at 5 o'clock as you were at 8 a.m.
Right. So that concept that you're not firing on all cylinders throughout the day, there are ups and downs. So, I mean, this is a little off the beaten path here, but the stuff that they call food nowadays really doesn't, you know, like the junk food you referred to, the vinegar chips, whatever.
Yeah.
They're all processed foods. They really don't optimize your performance. Have you found that high-ranking executives have a certain nutritional program that also aids their higher thought program?
I do. And that's part of the regimen, right? That's their weekly, how am I, what am I putting into my body that will allow my brain to come up with high quality insights? And because that's your greatest competitive advantage in today's economy. How can I have a differential thought? How can I create an environment where those ideas come to life? What we do know is junk food actually decreases your productivity every day by 20%. By 20%. I mean, think about that. If I woke up and I'm like, I'm going to work hard today, but I'll give up 20% just so I can have that bag of chips. If someone framed it that way to me, I'd be like, I'm good. I'm going to skip the chips. But it's really interesting. If you eat healthy food, your brain obviously is clearer. It's sharper. It operates more effectively. And so absolutely, the way that you can pre-plan your week around nutrition and just exercise, even if it's just walking, will have a direct correlation to your performance at work. That is not me saying it. That is an avalanche full of research that demonstrates the brain and the body are directly connected. Your brain is your asset for your career. Let's set up an environment each week so it can perform, it can shine.
Hey, and I didn't get to exercise, but you brought it up. So for me, exercise has been a part of my life for the past 40 plus years with a few minor exceptions, you know, life transformations where you just kind of get out of the habit. But now at this point, I'll never stop doing it till they bury me. But I assume that most of these high power executives all have an exercise regimen, if not to strengthen their bodies and their minds, to at least keep them at their current optimal level.
Yeah. And part of the exercise element is not just so that you can look good, right? I think that's the 80s and 90s mentality of we're in the bathing suits on the beach, and I just have a vision of the 80s that popped into my head for some reason. Now we know there's healthy stress, which we call eustress. There's a level of stress that actually gets you to sharper thinking. And if you're not moving your body and moving that stress around, it turns into distress. It's that feeling of overwhelm people talk about. And once you are in distress, your cognitive functioning, your ability to think great thoughts decreases. So the prefrontal cortex, where critical thinking happens, actually turns down. And other parts of your brain turn on because you've moved into a state of distress. It is now self-protection over goal-directed behavior. So you need exercise, if only if it's a walk around the block, they say for 11 minutes, to allow you to not only improve your cardiovascular health and decrease your risk of stroke, but also to be your best at work. And I mean that by when you use the word success, to be successful in results and relationship, we have to let go of this belief that the brain and body are not connected. They are one and the same. They are one and the same. And I will tell you, I did not take care of my body in my 30s. And I sprinted really fast and hard at work. And it had long-term implications. And I feel really slowed down my career. Because what I thought was the top of my game when I was bringing in six figures, I was like, this is it. This is the top. Keep sprinting. And when I finally learned how to create a regimen that allowed me to bring out my best, I realized, oh, that's nowhere near the top. I've got a lot more horsepower. I've just been draining it ineffectively every day. That was a real wake-up call for me.
So there's some trends like in Silicon Valley. Some are a little disturbing, like microdosing LSD to become more creative.
Yes.
I'm not advocating by any stretch. I think you're messing with your body, your brain chemistry.
Same.
But one thing that of recent years that's come to light is fasting. And
yeah,
I have started a fasting regime in the past year. And I find that mental acuity, mental clarity, energy, you think, oh, you don't eat, you're going to wither. But actually, the opposite's true, because your body shifts into fat burning mode and your clarity and your ability to focus goes way, way up. And you actually burn 10% more energy when you're fasting than when you're not. So I don't know if you've had any experience with it, anybody's ever told you about it, but share your thoughts.
Yeah, fasting has been really in the past 5 years, I've seen an explosion around this way to make sure you're optimizing your mental acuity, to your point, and also the way your body is physically responding. And it's not for everyone. Actually, it can have negative effects for some people depending on their body makeup. So it's worth talking to a doctor about it. However, there's another element to what you're talking about, which is priming your body for performance so that your brain is performing at its best. That's your greatest competitive advantage, right? And one thing we don't think a lot about that's directly correlated to this is confidence. When you don't feel good, when you wake up and you feel sluggish because you had two glasses of wine the night before, or you pushed through on a project and you went to bed at midnight and you didn't get enough sleep, or you're burning candle on both ends and just sprinting, and it feels like there's no end in sight. The other thing that gets hit is your confidence. And confidence is a skill, not a trait, which means you build it. You build it. You got to choose it every day and say, I'm going to lean in and build this muscle. And when you're depleted and tired and feeling down, it spirals into a, gosh, I don't know if I can actually do this. Gosh, this feels pretty big. Gosh, this weight, I'm not sure I really want to engage with this amount of weight at work or at home right now. And that impacts what you reach for and what you go for. So not only is it performance and mental acuity, but self-doubt can get pretty loud when you're feeling burnt out.
Yeah, confidence, every effective leader, even if you're not feeling confidence, you got to fake it, right?
Yeah, well, you have to choose it. So the way I look at it is, if I wake up and self-doubt is ringing really loudly, I've got this like low-grade buzz anxiety that's with me in the morning, either I can just allow that to happen or I can meet it. And what I mean by that is, there's accepting and believing that that's just you. And then there's realizing that's just a safety security mechanism that's saying something is off. So I'm going to throw doubt here and slow you down because something is off. It's okay to recognize that self-doubt turns on anytime you're going to step outside of your comfort zone, anytime, because the brain's saying, hey, there's a risk here. There's social risk here. There's financial risk here. There's career risk here. Even if it's small, self-doubt doesn't calibrate. It's loud. And the more we allow that to run, the louder it gets. Versus, there's fascinating research when they looked at the 2000 Sydney Olympics to say, who are those that made medals and who didn't? And what they found was a common denominator in those who made medals or earned medals. I always say made medals, but they didn't go into a shop and make them. They earned the medal. Was how they engaged with self-doubt, was how they engaged with their inner talk tracks. And they didn't give it the mic and say, have at it. Rerun this day, I guess I don't have confidence. They don't have the ability to do that because it's too taxing. It causes you to slow down and play small. Instead, they engage and say, thanks, I'm good. I've got it. I'm all good. Here's what I need to adjust. Let's keep going. And that way, when something goes wrong, they're not immediately internalizing that something's wrong with them.
Right. So what about the concept of visualizing success, imagining success? That's in a lot of these success gurus. But there's some validity to it, because athletes who've used visualization have excelled and have gotten almost as much benefit as physically doing the act that they're visualizing.
You know what's so cool about this one, which I talk about in the book, Choosing Greatness, is when you visualize a future event, playing it well or not, it is created, that visualization is created in the same part of the brain that stores previous memories. So what I'm saying is, you are making a memory of something that hasn't even happened yet, which is really powerful, because then when it comes to that moment, it's almost probable, it's more probable that it will play out that way because you've got a memory of it. You're like, I know how this goes. Oh, I know this situation. I know when this ends. It ends in a win. Versus what we tend to do, because we're primed to look at risk, is say, oh my God, I got that speech in 2 weeks or that presentation. I'm going to flub it. The CEO is going to wonder what the heck I'm doing. My colleagues are going to think I'm not smart. I get more and more anxious. And then guess what happens when I get there? I'm freaking out. And so making sure you are calm, balanced, objective, creating the regimen for your brain and your body to be showing up at its best is important, but so is visualizing what you want and leaning in confidently to go for it.
All right. I think we'll leave it at that. Now you've made me want to go out and buy the book. I assume it's available in Amazon and wherever fine books used to be sold.
It sure is. Barnes & Noble, you name it. Amazon, go for it. And it's called Choosing Greatness, an evidence-based approach to achieving exceptional results.
All right. And your website is CurtisLeadership.com. I suggest everybody go there. You can, of course, obtain the book there as well. Questions for Christina and myself, email address kl@carrylutz.com. And we'll have a link to Christina's site on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. So just go there, click through, and you'll be able to get the book. And while you're there, sign up for your free newsletter. Christina, been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.